You are listening to The Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
We were on YouTube.com/The Dan Patrick Show, but now our partner TV partner is Peacock. Say good morning to our radio partners. We're up to 362 cities around America. Also, those who are emailing, tweeting, those on chat row, we say good morning to them as well. We'll talk to Jim Boeheim, Syracuse head coach, on the passing of John Thompson. Also, we'll check in with the Lakers coming up as well. The Bucks close out the Magic. Clippers close out the Mavs. Lakers close out the Blazers. It's the Heat and the Bucks. Rockets, Thunder. Also, tanking for Trevor continues. I'm not going to say it starts, but it continues because the Jags traded away their best defensive player, Yannick Ngakoue, to the Minnesota Vikings. The NFL starts in 10 days. McLovin, what is the poll question today? Then we'll get to Coach Boeheim.
Most likely second-round upset, it's a runaway. The Miami Heat over the Bucks instead of the Rockets over the Lakers or the Jazz Nuggets over the Clippers.
Watch the matchup of the Greek Freak and Bam Adebayo. I know you're probably saying, wait a minute, that seems like a mismatch. Bam Adebayo is a very good player, and he's not the Greek Freak. But he's a talented big man. I really look forward to this matchup an awful lot. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle at DP Show, as we make way for the Syracuse head coach, Jim Boeheim. Coach, thanks for joining us. I wish it was under better circumstances, but the passing of John Thompson, what will his legacy be?
Bigger than life, you know, a little bit like you, Dan. Unique coach, a great coach, but a presence at every game. How many times do you go to a basketball game to watch the coach? None. No coaches. You know, NBA, college. You know, you went to the game to see Big John. And he was a great coach, but he was a presence in the game and really a true, the first real African-American role model for all young coaches, black and white, but also for kids, players growing up. You could see here's a guy that does it his way. He wins. He's successful. Really extraordinarily smart guy who understood what it was about. Really, on all sides, inside and out, basketball, on the court, off the court. We had the most bitter rivalry in the game, probably, at one point in time. There was no love lost. And as big as Duke, North Carolina is, it's a huge rivalry. It was not like Syracuse, Georgetown for about 15 years when the Big East started and Big John was there. But his presence was on and off the court. His leadership off the court for all coaches, and certainly African-American coaches. I don't know the numbers, how many black head coaches there were in 1972, but I know that it wasn't anywhere near the numbers today, and that's because of John Thompson.
Did he try to intimidate you?
Oh, he tried to intimidate everybody. And if you couldn't stand up to that, you were done. You were toast. You were out of it. And he made programs better because, you know, PJ at Seton Hall, Jim Calhoun at Connecticut. You can go right down the list of coaches, Rick Pitino at Providence, Gary Williams at Boston College, all who are in the Hall of Fame, Rolly Massimino. Should probably be in the Hall of Fame. They're in the Hall of Fame because of, well, two or three things. Dave Gavitt, the Big East, and John Thompson. Because you either matched up and played up to that level, and if you could play up to the Georgetown level at that time, you could beat anybody. And our league spawned great programs because of the standard you had to play up to compete with John. And his presence was unlike any other. But like I said, you don't go to games to watch coaches. But fans, 32,000 people went to the Carrier Dome to watch John Thompson.
And there was Hoya paranoia. You know, we as fans watching that. As a coach, did you have to tell your kids don't get caught up in that? Or did they ever get caught up in the Hoya paranoia?
Well, that was just John's way of us against the world. And it was the way he motivated his players, and he used it, and he pushed it. Nobody really hated those guys. My players were friends with the Georgetown players from a couple summer trips, but then they weren't allowed to talk to my players when we were going to play. But, you know, players know that stuff. They understand that stuff. They just want to compete. And I know the greatest games I've ever been involved with were with Georgetown, whether it was Patrick or in the Garden, here at Georgetown. Just great games, and you just like to be a part of it, really. Dave Gavitt built something out of nothing, and John was a big part of that. And certainly when Patrick went to Georgetown and Chris Mullen went to St. John's and Pearl came to Syracuse, that was our moment. That was the league's moment, and it was a great moment. And John was a big, big part of that.
Did you recruit Ewing at Syracuse?
Yeah, we went to see him. We were one of those, I think, 15 schools went in. But you knew going in that there was no chance he was going to Georgetown. You knew that pretty quickly. And then we recruited Alonzo after that. And Alonzo came up to visit. And I just brought him in the office the first night to, you know, just to say hi. And I said, I'm glad you're here, but I know you're going to Georgetown. He looked at me. He said, yeah, coach, you know, it'll be hard not to. He wanted to come up because Billy Owens was visiting, and they were good friends. And, of course, we got Billy. That worked out good for us, too.
When did you become friends with John Thompson?
You know, it was late in the – when he was still coaching near the end, I think we – talked at a Nike trip, a Final Four, and, you know, we found out that neither one of us were such bad guys. And, you know, we've been friends ever since that. And, you know, we met up every year at the Final Four someplace. It's ironic that when we won in 03, as I shook hands with Roy Williams, the next person I shook hands with was John Thompson. He was sitting there at the radio table with Bill Raftery, and he had a big smile on his face, and it was happy for me. We became great friends. We still have a great rivalry. He would poke us when we played Georgetown, and, you know, he loved doing that. But, again, there's not really any of us that are unique in coaching, but he was. He was unique.
And we're talking to Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim. Before I let you go, what are we looking at with college basketball?
We're going to play. I think that we have to learn as a society, not just from the NBA and baseball and soccer, golf. The greatest thing I've seen in golf was yesterday on TV, and we wouldn't have that if all the people that want people to just stay home for the next, I guess, 5 years all stayed home. So we have to figure it out. Athletes, I think, are safer on campus. The testing shows that. They're better off on campus. We could play during November, December with no students on campus if we're worried about the students affecting us. Yeah. But all in all, I think students in general and the public in general is better when kids are on campus being tested. And we should have rapid testing next month or so. And if you're doing that, where should students be? They should be on campus. They should be in high school. They should be in kindergarten. That's where they learn. I know that 50 or 60% of the high school kids in America are learning nothing or next to nothing. And how long can we do that? How long can that go on? And everybody says, well, you want to play, it's about the money. No, the players want to play. The money is irrelevant. The money is there. That's going to happen. But our players they've been working out for 7 weeks, Dan. They want to play, and we're testing them, and we will test them every day. Are there going to be some positives? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think too many times with younger people, we take positives as like a death sentence. It's not. It's something they can be back. 47 Clemson players tested positive this year, and all 47 are back practicing. So I think we have to understand this is tough. This is not easy, but we have to find a way to play through this. And I believe we will. I believe there will be some ups and downs, but you can't stop because there's some positive tests. There's positive tests in Arizona and California, and they're not going to school there.
Have you been tested?
I get tested every week. I wear my mask. I stay away from groups. I play golf by myself, but I always did anyway. But we have to take those precautions. You have to do your show safely. We have to do things as safely as we can. But I'm convinced players are safer on campus, being tested every day with the medical staffs around. And I think treatments have gotten better and much better for young people as well. But I just don't believe we can say, well, let's wait. 50% of the people don't take flu shots right now in the country. And people that get flu shots still get the flu. So I don't know how we can sit back and say, oh, yeah, we're going to have a vaccine in 2 months. I think that's political electioneering. I don't see that.
I think just the whole testing and getting the results back will certainly help out a lot when it comes to college athletics. It's great to talk to you, and thank you for reminiscing about Coach, and my best to the family.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
That's Jim Boeheim, Syracuse head coach. And, that's sort of the philosophy that you're hearing, because you don't have to worry about as many players, student-athletes, with college basketball. But the question is, where will we be when you want to start to travel? College basketball can really benefit from the after Thanksgiving scheduling, because if students are gone by Thanksgiving, now it's just the basketball players. Now, you might have football players still on campus, depending on where you are. Syracuse in the ACC, so you won't be having Syracuse football players on campus after Thanksgiving, I wouldn't think. Unless they're preparing for a bowl game, if we're having bowl games. But just the testing process here of what is happening, what could happen. College basketball is planning, and the ACC, SEC, Big 12 are playing. I don't know where we are with the Pac-12 or Big 10 when it comes to basketball, because we know that Pac-12 is not playing football. There was a report. It was first reported by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Friday morning. It was leaked, and I was told it was leaked by somebody at the University of Wisconsin. They're trying to put pressure on the commissioner of the Big Ten to be able to play some kind of modified schedule. And are they going to be able to do it after Thanksgiving? Are they going to? I was told more likely if it happens in January, but a lot of the players are going to opt out. They're not going to play if it's in January. They want to get ready for the draft. And plus, can you do January, February, then turn around and go back and play September, October? I'm told it's a real, real long shot for this to happen in the Big Ten. But the Big Ten, this is a mess, because it felt like, hey, let's get out in front of this, and we're going to make this decision. And that's where the athletic directors and the coaches are saying, we weren't even consulted on this. And then you make this decision that affects so many people. And I can't help but think what Ohio must be like if there's high school football, the Browns are playing, the Bengals are playing, the University of Cincinnati is playing, and the Ohio State is not playing. And I'm sure that their fans are going, we can't process this. We don't understand this. But college basketball, it's a little bit different. I mentioned in the first part of the show, we had John Thompson on. It was like, if not every year, it was every other year. The last time I spoke to him was April 2nd of 2018. He had joined us. He always did the tournament for Westwood One, and then we would get Coach on. And I asked him why he retired from coaching. Here is Big John.
The preparation for the game is probably one of the most difficult things that I found. And when I got to the point of feeling it was me and not the kids, I said, it's time to get the hell out of here, with it. And it comes to that point, particularly with the practices, because you have to get involved with so many personal things as well as getting involved with the game itself. But as far as the game is concerned, if I could just show up for the game and coach the game, heck, I could do that now.
And Coach would always have the towel on his shoulder. And he told us the story that his mom, when she was in the kitchen cooking, would always have a towel on her shoulder. And John just started doing that subconsciously. And then I think it turned out to be just a great acknowledgement or tribute to his mom. It would have the towel.
No, I didn't keep any special one, you know. And I got that from my mom in the kitchen. You know, people asked me about the towel. You know, I had the towel on my shoulder before I realized it was on my shoulder because I did it habitually. When my mom worked around the house, she'd always have a towel strung over her shoulders. And now I started doing it until people started to say, you know, well, he's walking around. People walk up to me today and ask me, where's the towel? You know, I have no idea where the towel was. I didn't have one special one.
Well, Guy Lewis had a special one, right? He had that checkered towel that he would have?
Yeah, he did. And Jerry Tark used to always have one that he bit on and chew on and you know, all the time. And those little things, you know, you do sometimes without realizing it, and then it becomes a habit. And most athletes are very superstitious. Most coaches are very. If I won a big game and knew I had, you know, a towel on my shoulder, you can believe me, I wouldn't take the towel off again.
John Thompson was, he told a story about 9/11, and I think he initially told this on Jim Rome's show, and he said that back in 2001, he was set to fly to New York to do a studio interview, and Thompson wanted to be able to do the interview with Jim Rome and still make a friend's birthday party in Las Vegas on September 13th, so he booked a ticket on American Airlines Flight 77. That departed on September 11th. That didn't work for the show, and Jim Rome's producer, Danny Schwartz, asked Thompson to instead push his flight back to September 12th. Thompson didn't like the change and told Schwartz, so Schwartz persisted. Thompson relented. After the events of 9/11, Thompson's house is near the Pentagon. He felt Flight 77's impact at his house. That morning it crashed into the Pentagon. That's when John Thompson realized that he would have been on that flight. So, interesting man. When I first started out at CNN in the early 80s, and once a year we would go to Georgetown and we would do interviews. Now, I never got to interview Ewing when he was playing there. They didn't let their players, they weren't available to the media. And I would sit down with Coach Thompson, and that would be it. We'd do a profile on Georgetown. But I got to cover the Big East because I was located in New York, in Midtown Manhattan. We were right across from the Garden at 5 Penn Plaza. And I got to cover the Big East tournament. We did stories on Chris Mullin, Mark Jackson, Louis Carnesecca, Syracuse. I covered Raleigh Massimino and Villanova when they won the national title. That parade, I went to it. You know, I was just very, very fortunate to be around a magical time with college basketball. But Coach he'd intimidate, no doubt about it. He tried to intimidate you. And then after a while, I saw him in a Final Four. And he was friends with Sonny Vaccaro, the guy who started the whole Nike, Michael Jordan shoe career. And Sonny had told John about me and that, you know, you should get to know him. He knows college basketball. And Coach was outside. He was in a hotel lobby. And that big booming voice. And he says to me, I'm told I'm supposed to get to know you. Now, there are all these other coaches and people around. And I was shocked. I was like, I said, hey, Coach. So here he is, 6'10", 300 pounds. And then he says it one more time. I'm supposed to get to know you. And I said, well, I'd love to. He goes, why do I need to get to know you? I said, well, you know, I love the game. I follow the game. And then after that, I would see him or he would seek me out or he would see me come over and say hello. And that was always the running joke. I'm supposed to get to know you. And we eventually had good conversations after that. But I remember in 2007, we're in Washington, D.C., and we're starting this show, and I'm at the radio station he works at, and he was doing a show right after ours, and he came in, and when he walked in through the doorway, you couldn't see any light around the doorway. It was just John was walking through the door. And, you know, once you realize that he was trying to intimidate you, but deep down, you know, he meant well, then you could have a conversation. You could joke with him. You could have a conversation with him. And I think getting to know Patrick Ewing as well, you know, it was us against the world. It truly was the way Georgetown and the way John positioned his team. He told those kids, it's us against the world. And they bought into it. So, rest in peace, big man. Big John. And I did reach out to Patrick Ewing, just offer my condolences. He appreciated that. And maybe we get Patrick on. He's always been very generous with his time. And he'll probably have a couple of great stories. All right, let me take a break. We'll come back. We're going to head into the bubble. We'll talk some basketball, talk about the Lakers. And also this story about LeBron James and how he turned off a lot of the owners, a lot of the players with some of his comments at the meeting, the players-only meeting. I have more on that coming up. 22 after the hour. This is The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. We'll hear from Luka Doncic coming up here in a moment. By the way, the Padres have just traded for Mike Clevinger of the Indians. He was one of the two players who, Zach Plesac, they went out on the town in Chicago and they tested positive and then kind of fell out of favor with Terry Francona and the Cleveland Indians. So the Padres get a good pitcher in Clevinger. Padres are in it. This is a 60-game sprint. All you got to do is get in the postseason with 16 teams. So Padres are making all the moves, you know, getting some bullpen help here. I hope that there are other teams in the league who aren't going, oh, yeah, but it's the Padres. Yeah, Padres are good. Better watch them. And once you get into the postseason, we know, surprise, surprise, anything can happen. McLovin, update the poll results. Then I'll get to Kyle Goon, who's covering the Lakers and the other teams down there in the bubble.
Most likely second-round upset. 60% say the Heat over the Bucks, and then the next closest one is if the Rockets get advanced, that they would beat the Lakers.
All right, Kyle Goon joins us, Southern California News Group, covering the Lakers and an NBA writer. Kyle, thanks for joining us. Is everything good with the Lakers now after polishing off the Blazers?
that's a complicated question, Dan. I would say the tone of Saturday was a lot happier and healthier than perhaps it was earlier in the week. Obviously, Wednesday night, there was a thought that perhaps the Lakers would be one of the foundational teams in actually sitting out the rest of the games of the season. But, you know, on Saturday night, they closed at the Blazers. It took them a couple extra days, but they took care of business. Now they have a couple days off. Some families are supposed to arrive today, and that's a really big moment that a lot of players on a veteran team have been looking forward to. So I would say they're doing a lot better, but obviously there's been a lot of shaking up in the last week.
Well, I'm looking at the latest column from you, and granted, you don't write the headline, but it says after a trying week and a Lakers series win, LeBron James pulls back from the brink.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to really understand that, you know, LeBron tried to tell us the other day that he was not upset. I think that he was. I think that he was frustrated on Wednesday night when he realized that, you know, Milwaukee had staged a protest that they kind of thought was going to be one game, one forfeit, a very sort of organic moment, not really communicating with the rest of the league. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of tension among, you know, athletes for sure, who are some of the most prominent and resourceful people of color in the whole country. And it struck a nerve, I think, that the Bucks did not realize that it would. And then once players were meeting later that night, when LeBron, who definitely understands the power and ramifications of a move like that, got to that meeting, he realized there was nothing that Milwaukee was prepared to ask for to resume play. They just thought, hey, we're gonna go out for game six and try to win our series then. So I think that was the frustration. I don't know how close he was to actually walking out. I don't think he had his bags packed or anything, but I think there was a lot of thought given to the fact that, you know, if we aren't asking for something, what are we doing here?
Well, you have more concerns about the Lakers on the floor or off the floor?
I think off for sure. And another thing LeBron said that night, and partly in jest, but partly not, is that he's given him thought to leaving the bubble every day. And, you know, it's such a weird situation here, Dan, because, you know, I understand what he means. I mean, there's just not a lot of outlets. There's not a lot of changing routine. You have isolation from the people you love. And I think there's something really profound about just the, when something happens in the outside world, like the Jacob Blake shooting, and obviously a lot of players care, it really makes the feeling of helplessness and frustration more pronounced. And I honestly think that the bubble has a lot to do with the Bucks' decision to try and forfeit that game.
You've got a long way to go, though. The Bucks do, and the Lakers, these are, you know, the two favorites here.
Yeah. And we've already done, 50-some days, and we got 40-some days to go. I'm also here the entire way. So it's definitely it can feel like a long look up to the top of the mountain, I think. So I think for some guys, I mean, obviously George Hill said even before that, we shouldn't even come to this place. I'm being polite language for your listeners. But guys were feeling it. And I think that's inextricable from what actually happened, that guys were feeling frustrated. Guys were feeling like, you know, we're putting these messages out there. We have these messages on the back of our jerseys. We have the messages on the court. And what is it really making a difference? Is it really being heard? Is there more we could do if we were outside? And, you know, I think that's something that you really feel here as long as we've been here when you're in isolation.
Watching the Clippers against the Mavs, everybody was in on Portland upsetting the Lakers, and I said, you know, Dallas has a better chance of upsetting the Clippers. If it had been reversed and the Lakers played the Mavs, then everybody would have said, oh, the Mavs can upset the Lakers. Because everybody, you get clicks when you talk about the Lakers. Nobody was thinking, hey, let me write about the Clippers maybe getting upset. I thought that they were perilously close to being down 3-1. And, I mean, eventually we see the real Kawhi Leonard stepping up. I just don't know if who is going to be the guy you count on to step up with Kawhi. Because as great as he is, one guy's not winning this title with that team. So
yeah.
You look at the Clippers and the Lakers, who would be your favorite between those two playing for a championship?
That is a really good question. And, you know, this entire playoffs has been, I mean, I think the mental edge is such an X factor, because I think the thing happening with the Lakers in the Blazers series is one thing that really needed to happen for them is Anthony Davis needed to believe, you know what, like, I don't really have a matchup on this team. And I think that's going to be a constant battle for the Lakers in the same way. Obviously, Paul George between the two quote-unquote co-stars is having a rougher time and has admitted to having a rougher time. And I don't want to diminish from that because it is very relatable, to be honest. When he said those things, it's very relatable as somebody who's been living here for about the same amount of time. But
you felt those same things, Kyle?
I mean, not checking out because we remain busy, but just a desire to like just change something about your circumstances. Same room, same small area you go around. When I run in a circle around the Coronado Springs Resort. So I think there's this sort of the days can kind of blend together. And guys, I mean, the guys have said this. So it's just this X factor that, you know, it's really hard to anticipate. And I think Paul George has struggled with that. I think one reason Kawhi has not, he told us last night when he had that injury with San Antonio and he was rehabbing by himself, he's like, all right, like all I did was kind of gym, go home. And he did that for what, a year? And he sort of has had that reclusive experience away from some others and knows how to go through it. So I think that's why you've seen he's been remarkably consistent. And he really is. I mean, if you watch him in that series, as great as and spellbinding as Luka was, Kawhi was unguardable. And he was hitting shots that, you know, you're sort of like, well, this isn't really a great shot. But for Kawhi, he'll kill you in the mid-range because you'll just let him sit and he'll just pick you apart. So I think that's a great base. And if Paul George can kind of figure out some consistency, and maybe that'll get easier as we're sort of rolling downhill here. I would pick the Clippers and like over the Lakers right now in a pick 'em, but like I said, and like you said, it's really hard to know mentally where some of the guys are going to be at.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting. I appreciate you sharing your personal feelings on that, because it's kind of like, you know, you're in a bubble too. You know, we talk about these athletes, but you're in a bubble too, so you can certainly understand that. Before I let you go, Jamal Murray averaged 18 points a game, I think, this year. He's putting up 50 every night. What has changed with Jamal Murray in the bubble?
You know, that is an interesting question too, because I think for certain guys, they're just shooting lights out. And I also look at his counterpart in that series, Donovan Mitchell, who I covered for a year. And I really enjoy watching play, but I mean, he put up 250 pieces too. It's kind of unbelievable what's happening in that series. Really, I mean, pleased that it gets to go to seven games, but I think there are guys here who, you know, they really just do dive in on that investment to basketball. I mean, Jamal Murray has been capable of doing those kinds of games, just not usually back to back to back.
Yeah.
But I think, there is something about this and guy where guys can seize on the emotion of the moment, can seize on the, hey, we don't want to go home yet, even though maybe you do want to go home in some respects, but, it's been really cool to watch. I mean, Dame before them in the seeding games all the way to make a run. There's been some guys who really have found a way to thrive in this environment and add it sort of to the, it's us against the adversity of the world mindset that you were talking about with Big John before the break. So it's been really interesting and fun and sometimes really rewarding to watch.
Good luck there, Kyle. And we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
That's Kyle Goon. He covers the Lakers for Southern California News Group, NBA writer. All right. Kyle would, I mean, that you talk about if you were going to have a hockey name. Right?
Yeah.
Hey, as soon as you get on there, but imagine you were like a really like a nice guy and you're a scorer. Like Kyle, you know, Kyle Goon, but he would be a scorer. You know, he seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, Kyle Polite does not scare anybody.
Yeah, that's true. So once again, the Padres have picked up Mike Clevinger. I just want to let you know, Clevinger is a really good right-handed pitcher. My Padres here. Last season, he struck out 12 hitters per nine inning. So among right-handed pitchers, that's the 10th highest single-season figure of all time. And the Padres just got Mike Clevinger. You know, once again, everybody strikes out in baseball. I was looking at averages, batting averages of a couple of teams, and it was pathetic. Like you'd go like 198, 202, 217, 219, 242, 282. Like 282, you're Pete Rose. And baseball's got problems. But baseball's biggest problem to me is it is either a home run or a strikeout. It is a boring game. And that's why I never thought I would say it, but I applaud what I see with Fernando Tatis Jr. Have some fun. Maybe they learned it from Korean baseball where they had the bat flips and we're at a point where baseball is really teetering on the brink here. I don't know where we're going. I don't know what baseball is going to look like after this. I think this can be exciting. But if you watch a game, and I watch some baseball this weekend, it's tough. It is truly tough to get through a game because all it is I'm swinging for a home run and you're trying to strike me out. There's no movement whatsoever. I know I sound like the old man on the lawn, but I'm not, because the old man, you know, telling you to get off his lawn would say, hey, you can't bat flip. You know, you can't be doing this. not that you tune in for a sacrifice fly or a moving the runner over or a hit and run, but at least there was movement. And that's the biggest opponent baseball has right now is itself. It's a boring game. All right, we'll take a break. Last call for phone calls. We'll close up shop after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Utah-Denver series turned into a head-to-head duel between Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray. In the postseason, they ranked first and third respectively among players scoring the highest percentage of their team's points. So Mitchell he's got 32% of his team's points. That's the highest in the bubble. Joel Embiid was second at just under 30%. Jamal Murray at 29.6%. Then it's James Harden, Luka Doncic, and the Greek Freak. LeBron James right now ranks 10th. He's scoring 23% of the Lakers' points. Couple of phone calls in here. Michael in Texas. Hey, Mike, what do you have for me today?
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Good, sir.
Worst of the weekend is I'm an Arizona alum, so hearing the news about Lou Olson, just rest in peace to him. And best of the weekend is I'm a diehard New York Islanders fan, and they're currently steamrolling all over McLovin's Flyers. And I don't want to see any more New York Rangers gear out of Fritzy in the back row. I mean, I love you guys, but time you start repping the Islanders, get some winning, clothes on. And, it's New York Islanders time. Barry Trotz has the Islanders playing the system, and we're 9 wins from the Stanley Cup.
All right. Love it. All right. Thank you, Michael. By the way, baseball, the league-wide average in Major League Baseball is .244. That's the lowest league-wide batting average since 1972. And keep this in mind. This is the first year when pitchers don't even bat. That batting average should be as high as ever, but it's the lowest since 1972.
Stat of the day. Here comes that what? Stat of the day.
After the loss yesterday with the Mavs and the Clippers, Rick Carlisle, the Mavs head coach, talked about the flagrant foul on Luka with Marcus Morris. This is what coach of the Mavs had to say.
The play speaks for itself. As soon as this play happened in real time, I knew he was getting ejected. I knew it was a flagrant too. It's just an unnecessary play and unfortunate.
Yeah, it is, because this is where the commissioner, and I know he's got other things to worry about, but you got one of your star players and they're trying to rough him up. And I thought that this should have been, somebody should have said something to him that you got away with stepping on his ankle. You don't get away with this. I don't know if he gets suspended for a game, but Morris is doing what you want him to do. Teams have a guy that is that kind of enforcer. In fact, Dallas could use a guy like Morris. Here is Luka Doncic on the flagrant foul by Morris.
I mean, it's a terrible foul, What can I say? It's 2 games in a row he did something like that. And I really didn't. I hope so. The first game, it wasn't on purpose. But looking back at the foul this game, what I think. So I don't want to deal with that kind of players. Just move on.
Yeah. I mean, you can't let that person thrive at the expense of, a skilled position player. And that's a problem. And I thought it was intentional stepping on his ankle. And if you look at the other plays in the series, nobody did that to Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. But they did that to Luka. And they're going to do that because he's young and they want to test him. They want to see if he's soft. And until he gets an enforcer, they're going to continue to do that to him. Jeff in Detroit. Hi, Jeff. What do you have for me?
What up, though? One time for Chat Row 2.0. First of all, best and worst of the weekend. Best is going to be Well, let's start with the worst. Worst is going to be the death of Chadwick, Lou, Cliff Robinson, and John. You know, all of these guys at the same time, kind of hurt. You know, my prayers go out to them and their families. My best is going to be, I got a couple of bests. First of all, I was on this awesome podcast, 1215 Breakfast Club, and it was really, really nice. You are a very, very good sensei. Them guys hit me with some wonderful questions, and it was really nice. Turned more from an interview into a conversation, so I really appreciate those guys allowing me on. Second is going to be my cousin from Ohio calling me up talking trash because they put Ohio up as the number two team, and then by them not playing, they just took them off the board in the AP poll. So, you know, anytime I can hate on Ohio, Ohio football, I do, man. It's just in my nature.
Thank
Michigan
you, Chip.
Fan. And C.J. McCollum, dude, I just got to say his name. Most improved. Without him, I don't know where Portland would be. And do you think he's being shadowed by Dame Star? Because if it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have been in the playoffs at all. That Memphis game he went off.
I would say. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Jamal Murray's most improved there. Jamal Murray went from averaging 18 to, you know, scoring 50. Man, he's been unbelievable. By the way, the 1215 podcast every Friday, right after our show with the backroom guys. They do an average job. This day in sports history, Paul?
1959, Sandy Koufax set the National League record at the time by striking out 18 batters in a game. And a sad one, 1969, boxer Rocky Marciano died in an airplane crash in Iowa.
Yeah. Final results poll question, McLovin.
Which team is most likely to have a second round upset? The Heat blow away the Rockets and the Jazz/Thunder.
By the way, last day that you can enter the nextgreatpodcast.com. Make sure you put in your entry today, and then we'll eventually pick a winner. And I'm going to go into business with you and produce your podcast, the nextgreatpodcast.com. Todd, what did you learn today?
Jim Boeheim continues to practice social distancing by playing golf all by himself.
Yeah, probably not by his choice. McLovin.
Marvin is letting in Jerky Islander fans now, apparently.
Marvin answers our phone calls. Seton O'Connor.
San Diego Padres all in.
Yeah, they are. Trading for Mike Clevenger. Paulie.
It's probably a good day for Leonard Fournette.
Todd, what did I learn?
Seems like a long shot for the Big Ten to get football going in time for Thanksgiving.
What we learned brought to you by LegalZoom. Start online, network of independent attorneys providing advice when you need it. Since LegalZoom is a law firm, you don't have to leave your home. Visit LegalZoom.com today for more information. Thanks for the phone calls, emails, tweets, all around support. For Seton Paulie, Fritz, and McLovin, yours truly, Dan Patrick Show.